In retrospect, revolution does not seem too strong a metaphor to describe the changes that followed Ronald Reagan's election as President of the United States. The 1980s saw important shifts in politics, for sure, but economics and culture as well, in how America saw itself and the world. Not all of those can be directly or indirectly attributed to Ronald Reagan, but there is no question that he was the dominant figure of his time. This transformational president inspired intense reactions from his fans and from his critics. He and his policies changed our lives. Today, amidst nationwide reflection on Ronald Reagan and his times, call and tell us how your life changed in the 1980s. Did Ronald Reagan inspire you to switch political parties and become a Reagan Democrat, to join the military, or join the nuclear freeze movement? Were you and your family affected by his tax cuts or maybe by cuts in social programs? To join the conversation, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our first guest for our reflection on the Reagan era is David Gergen. He worked for four presidents and served Ronald Reagan as director of communications, and he joins us now by phone from Boston, Massachusetts. David, welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
You were mentioned had worked in the Nixon and the Ford administrations before going to work for Ronald Reagan. You were, by that time, a Washington professional, I guess. I think it's fair to say. In what way would you say that Ronald Reagan changed the culture of Washington, D.C.?
Well, he certainly can't change the culture about the presidency itself as an institution, and that was that we'd had a series of presidents, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, none of whom served two terms. Together, they all left office either in death, as in Kennedy's case, or in defeat, or in disgrace. And there was a sense in the late 70s that no one could govern anymore. Lloyd Cutler, for example, who was a general counsel to President Carter, was floating ideas about constitutional amendments, and people were having meetings and conferences on whether the Constitution ought to be amended to give the president more power, to have a quasi-parliamentary-type system, because nobody seemed to be able to govern. And as Reagan was elected, of course, there was a conviction in much of Washington that he, least of all, could lead or govern. Clark Clifford, who was a longtime Democratic doyen of Washington, mm-hmm. used to call him an amiable dunce in the dinner parties around Georgetown. And I think that then was a great surprise to many that when Reagan came in, sort of the cowboy from the West, and arrived and very quickly established a sense of authority and direction in the presidency that even his skeptics were saying, my golly, he's a real leader. He knows where he wants to go, and people are following. He got the Democrats, of course, to vote for many of his economic policies early on. So I think that he did begin to rebuild the presidency as an institution which people turn to. And he was the first two-term president, of course, since Eisenhower. And that was a pretty important achievement for him. How much he changed the country domestically and in terms of its foreign affairs, I think is a more complicated set of questions.
Mm-hmm. Let's stick to the presidency just for a moment.
Sure.
This country has a system that unique when it was developed. The president of the United States is both the head of government and the head of state. This is not the case in many other countries around the world. And Ronald Reagan was particularly capable in that second role as the head of state.
I think that's right. And it's in some ways symbolic of that we're now having the first state funeral in 30 years in Washington, first one since Johnson in 73, because we are honoring him, in effect, as head of the country. And that's why, you know, so many relate to him overseas, is that the president, the other role, head of government, is more like a prime ministerial role. It's how you sort of move things around within the government, and prime ministers tend to be very hands-on. Reagan, of course, was not a hands-on person. He was a visionary. He was a dreamer who liked to mobilize people, with his dreams, and then would leave much of the delegation, if you would, of the prime ministerial or the head of government role to others. He himself thought of government or his role as governor of California and what his role as president as chairman of the board, not the chief operating officer.
He For a while, the press used to keep a running record of his malapropisms, his mistakes,
yeah,
right. and things he'd gotten wrong, facts he'd remembered from the movies that he presented as
yeah.
as real. After a while, they stopped because people didn't care.
Well, that's right, and you know, I was one of the people who had to keep total on those things, and he'd asked me to go check them out. After he became president, he said, "I want you to go look up these various things that I said. People accused me of being wrong, and let's get the record straight." So I went and looked up. You know, he said during the campaign that trees kill more people than the pollution from trees kills more people than from pollution from automobiles. Well, as you can imagine, the press had a field day with that. They all went crazy. And he said that in New Hampshire, and the press all went and had a filing break. And he got on a plane, went back to California, and he was going to an event in Southern California, and there was a graduate student tied up to a tree, had a big sign on him said, "Kill me before I kill again." Mark Shields likes to tell that story. He said that's why he misses the Gipper. There were a lot of things like that, you know, 50 taxes on a loaf of bread, and there were not 50 taxes on a loaf of bread. As to the pollution issue, there is a question about, it's a little bit like cows. Do cows cause pollution? There are some issues that scientists raise, but of course trees by and large are very good for us. I came to defend him, Neil, on the basis of on some of these things that Reagan was telling larger truths that I went out and defended him once. You know, you got to remember the importance of parables in life. Don't try to use every one of these stories as an absolute truth, but see them in parables. I think that's the way the country saw them. I got a lot of grief for saying parables. I got attacked from some people, but I think the country did see them as sort of stories that pointed to larger truths rather than stories that were necessarily, grounded in a day-to-day reality. I mean, he remembered things out of movies that he thought actually happened.
As we remember this character, we also have to remember, as you said, that other role as head of government, where he was, we forget, he obviously left office immensely popular. His popularity has grown over time, but he was a very controversial and divisive figure.
He was, and especially with his economic policies, there were many who believed that his tax cuts went too deep and that the spending cuts affected too many. And we had great arguments. Bill Moyers did a special on CBS, I remember, that was quite controversial, taking on the president in 1983, I think it was, and making the argument that he was essentially Scrooge and had really put the poor out in the snow. As I look back as someone who was there and on his team, I have to say that there is a piece of me that thinks that, in some instances, I think the tax cuts got too big. What the fact is, he proposed a more responsible set of tax cuts, and they got enlarged, or Christmas treat, as it said in Washington, in the Congress, and we decided, or he decided to sign the bill. I think we'd have been far better off as a country had those initial tax cuts been, more targeted and somewhat smaller. As it was, he had to spend a good deal of time thereafter agreeing to a variety of tax increases to close some of those gaps, and I think he did that graciously. But there were also some cuts in programs that I think that, in retrospect, I don't think they were anywhere near as draconian as some people remember. And indeed, as I remember Reagan, he was someone who wanted to keep the social safety net pretty well intact. But there were some cuts in social debt programs that I think probably, in retrospect, I wish we'd not done. But I have to tell you, at the same time, we were at a time when he came into office, he was absolutely right that the taxes had gotten too high. The upper rate was up to 70%. We were spending money on a lot of great society programs that weren't working, that needed the government really needed a haircut, and we did have excessive regulation. You remember OSHA, right? Mm-hmm. Occupational Safety and Health Administration. I mean, the kind of regulations they would put out about what kind of, describing a ladder and 12 pages of what you had to have on your shop floor. And those things, there were some silliness and there were some excess in government that I think that needed to be taken out of the system. And eventually even Democrats came to recognize that, as Bill Clinton was one of the leading apostles of trying to deal with some of that.
We're speaking with David Gergen, who, among his work for many administrations in the White House, was Director of Communications for Ronald Reagan. We want to hear your thoughts as well on how your life changed in the 80s, directly or indirectly, or perhaps not at all as a result of Ronald Reagan's presidency. Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Let's begin with Pete, who's with us from Fredonia, New York.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
I was a steel worker in the early 80s, and in 1984, Reagan's second election, I was in the Union Hall that night and never saw so many grown men cry in my life, big, strong, steelworking men, because they knew what that meant to their livelihood. And as far as I'm concerned, Reagan was the first embarrassment to our government as a president, and along came the next two Bushes, and things have been very bad ever since. That's all I have to say.
Okay, Pete, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, as you suggest, obviously various parts of the economy did well under Ronald Reagan, but as Pete's experience suggests, some others didn't.
Well, that's true, but it's also important to understand and that two things. One, we had a deep recession in 81, 82, first 2 years of Reagan presidency. We went into recession about September of that year. About 8 months after he'd been sworn in. Now, Reagan gets a lot of blame for that because it occurred on his watch. I think a lot of us believe that what he inherited was extraordinarily high interest rates. The inflation rate or the prime interest rate had gone over 20% under Carter, and the economy got tipped into a recession, and people got hurt. And many, many places, the unemployment rate went skyrocketing. I think it hit 8 to 10%. I can't. Please don't hold me to that number.
Okay.
It's also true,
it's a parable,
there are
maybe.
Certain industries, such as steel, which have been facing, you know, foreign competition. That has nothing to do with Reagan. It's just the nature of the globalization. So that, and they were looking for protection. And it's a hard question. Are you going to protect your workers against foreign competition at the expense of your own consumers? And are you going to prop up some industries, or should you let them go in the nature of the capitalistic system? And that's a... Those are tough, tough questions. George Bush, as you know, or George W. Bush, in early in his term, supported steel quotas, 30% quotas. Well, that was to protect steel workers. But the economists all went crazy, as did our foreign competitors, who said it's totally unfair, not free trade, this you can't do this anymore in this new world. It's very protectionist. So you have to decide. I mean, and if you're really going to be for free trade, the truth is some people are going to get hurt, and if you're going to be for free trade, you've really got to have much more robust programs than any president has had, Democrat or Republican, to help the workers like this young man who just called, this fellow just called. They need to be helped when their industries really get crunched, as steel has been crunched.
Here's an email we got from Russell Slyter, I guess it's pronounced. I hope I got that right. I spent 1980 through 1983 in the U.S. Army working on a nuclear missile site in Germany. My earliest thoughts as to my expectations then was just how short my life would be if we ever launched our missiles. Today, I find myself thanking former President Reagan for avoiding such an event in history.
Well, that was another great and dramatic confrontation that Reagan was, you know, it was very controversial. Reagan decided to put in medium range missiles in Europe because the Soviets had put them in, as to confront them and to even off the balance. And there was a great resistance to that. The peace now people and the zero, wanted to have a 0-0 kind of arrangement, and the German people were very much opposed to it. There were many, many peace marches here in this country, and it was argued. I remember some great authorities in the foreign policy argued if we put those nuclear missiles in those short-term or medium-term missiles into Europe, the Russians will walk away from the table and they'll never come back on arms control. It will destroy all the arms control negotiations. So it was something of a gamble. But Reagan went forward with it, thought it was the right thing to do. And in this case, it really worked. I mean, I think almost everyone would now agree.
David, we're running out of time, so finish that thought after we come back from a break. We're talking about Ronald Reagan's impact on the 1980s. We'll take more of your calls after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about Ronald Reagan and his era, the 1980s. Of course, you're invited to join us. Was it the nationally televised experience of his assassination attempt, or speaking about the Challenger explosion that you'll never forget? Did Ronald Reagan inspire you to register Republican? Did the 1987 stock market crash sour you on Wall Street? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. To trigger your memory, a Ronald Reagan timeline can be viewed at npr.org. With us on the phone from Boston is David Gergen. He was Ronald Reagan's director of communications. And joining us now from his office here in Washington, D.C. is Peter Kornbluh. He's co-editor of the Iran-Contra scandal, the Declassified History. Good of you to be with us today, Peter.
It's a pleasure to be on the show.
What brought you to Washington?
Well, I came to Washington at the very end of the Carter administration to become a scholar and an activist on U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. The 8 years of the Reagan administration certainly gave me a lot of things to work with. It was a very, very difficult time. It was a time when my generation, which became the next generation of activism after the Vietnam War and that generation. And it was a huge human rights movement in this city and in this country, and there was a huge movement to basically try and stop Ronald Reagan's policies in Central America, particularly the paramilitary war in Nicaragua.
He saw all of that, a lot of that, in terms of the greater struggle against Soviet communism. Many of the people on your side said, hey, the ends don't justify the means.
Well, he was an old-school Cold Warrior, there's no doubt about that. But he and the people around him certainly didn't have any appreciation of revolution in Latin America and the conditions in Latin America. Ronald Reagan had all this hyperbole about, you know, communists marching to the Rio Grande, you know, after the overthrow of the Somoza government, and there really wasn't going to be a domino effect like that in Central America. But basically, under his administration, we supported the Contra War. There was an extraordinary amount of bloodshed. U.S. policy was directed at supporting the most cutthroat of military personnel and atrocities in El Salvador and Guatemala. And there were quite a few people in this country. I think people forget how controversial his Contra War was and his policies in Central America were. There were quite a few people who opposed this. In fact, the opinion polls made it clear that the majority of the American public opposed the Contra War. And eventually, Congress, as you know, terminated that policy, and that led directly to Reagan's Iran-Contra operations, which became a huge scandal.
Indeed, that was the for those who've forgotten the sale of overpriced military parts to Iran, in part to arrange for the release of hostages, but also to send those profits on to fund the Contra War, which Congress was prohibiting at the time.
That's right. You know, Theodore Draper, who was an anti-communist himself and a middle of the road philosopher, wrote that if ever the constitutional democracy of the United States is overthrown, we now have a better idea of how this is likely to be done, in his analysis of the Iran-Contra scandal. And some people forget how upsetting that was to have Reagan and the people around him not only undermining his publicly stated policies of never negotiating with terrorists in the Middle East by selling arms to the Iranians, but also in circumventing the constitutional, you know, separation of powers by raising money from Saudi Arabia and from the sale of arms to Iran to illegally fund a war that the Congress had said should stop.
David Gergen, you started out this program by remarking how Ronald Reagan reshaped Washington's thinking about the ability to rule. There was at least a moment there in the Iran-Contra scandal where people began to think seriously that Ronald Reagan might not serve two full terms either.
There was indeed, and there was talk of impeachment in Congress during that or the early stages of the Iran-Contra scandal. I think to put it in a somewhat broader context, it is certainly true that the Reagan administration took a very confrontational, aggressive stance toward the spread of socialistic or communistic regimes in Central America, and feared that in Nicaragua with the Sandinistas. I do think that there is justification to believe that, that the spread of those kind of regimes would have been put those nations backward, not forward. After all, look at what happened with Cuba under Castro. I mean, for all the controversies we have about whether we ought to be have a different kind of relationship with Castro now, there's no doubt that the Castro administration has meant that the people of Cuba live much, much worse off than most people in other parts of Latin America today, and sort of a shambles in Havana now. So I think there's the mistake, and it was a serious mistake on the part of the Reagan administration, was to get involved in this selling of guns in Iran and then the contravention of the and violation, in fact, of the laws on the Contras passed by the Congress, and I think the president recognized that it was a, you know, these are it's a hard question to know exactly how it happened that Ollie North and others got into this process, but there and to what extent Bill Casey was involved, how much Reagan knew, but I do think it's one of the downsides of the Reagan presidency. The upside, he had a lot of upsides. The one downside was, because he was not attentive to some of the things we call sort of the prime ministerial role, they got away from him. In this case, this got away from him. This freelancing on the part of some people who worked for him, I think, got him into a lot of trouble. And he himself recognized it was a grave situation and that he was in a lot of trouble. I think the best thing he did in retrospect is that when scandal hit, and it was seen as a scandal, the Iran-Contra, he moved swiftly to do the right things to clean it up. The Congress wanted to hold hearings. He waived all executive privilege for anybody to go up and testify. He made all the documents available. He brought in an outside commission to look at it. He cleaned house inside. He fired people. He brought in Howard Baker to be his chief of staff, Ken Duberstein to come in as deputy, and Colin Powell to come into the National Security Council team. So he did, in my judgment, after a terrible mistake, and I think the worst mistake of his presidency, he did, I think, set a model for how one responds when you've made a terrible mistake.
Peter Kornbluh, all that took some time, though.
Well, I can understand how David Gergen can see that his perspective from the inside of the White House, but you know, luckily for us, the Iran-Contra scandal caused Congress to pretty thoroughly investigate and led to the special prosecutor Lawrence Walsh's long investigation, and the net result was a declassification of quite a few documents, which tell us a very different story than David Gergen has just put out. And these documents are available for people to go back and look at what Ronald Reagan did. Reagan and Edward Meese kind of spun the scandal as it being about Oliver North and John Poindexter doing this illegal diversion of funds when there were so many other illegal things that they were doing. And one of the declassified documents that came out, finally, after a long cover-up, I have to say, by Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger, was his notes on a meeting. And meetings where he actually told the president that the sale of arms to Iran was illegal, and the president said, "Well, I want to be seen as the strong president who, you know, went and got those hostages freed." And the response by Weinberger was, "Well, Mr. President, visiting hours are on Thursdays. In other words, we'll be visiting you in prison."
In prison, yeah.
And you know, these documents, I think, are very revealing about not only the character of Ronald Reagan, but the character of the men around him and the policies that he undertook, which can't be forgotten, were caused one of the greatest scandals in the Cold War.
I just have to say, I think that's a huge hyperventilation and hyping of what happened, I think it misreads Reagan, and I think it sort of treats Reagan also as a singularly aggressive, overly aggressive president toward Latin America. Let's just face it, and we've had presidents since the beginning of the 20th century who practiced forms of gunboat diplomacy in Latin America. We have treated it as our backyard too often. We have manipulated some of those countries there too often. And whether you're talking about Woodrow Wilson or Teddy Roosevelt or Franklin Roosevelt or Lyndon Johnson or Ronald Reagan, there have been presidents who have monkeyed around in some of those democracies in ways that are inappropriate. And I think all of us are learning that that's the wrong way to go. But let's not sort of treat Reagan as sort of, you know, some monster here when, in fact, there's been a long history of this. And in my judgment, he was much less involved in this and approved much less of this than is suggested.
I think evidence of the passion that he inspired on both sides on a lot of questions. And Peter Kornbluh, I wanted to thank you for joining us today.
You're more than welcome.
Peter Kornbluh was a specialist on the Contra War during the 1980s. He was on the phone from his office in Washington. David Gergen, I know you have to run. We appreciate your time, as always.
Neil, it's terrific to be here again. Thank you.
David Gergen was Director of Communications for Ronald Reagan and is now Director of the Center for Public Leadership at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. He joined us on the phone from his office in Washington. Let's get another listener on the line. This is Janice, who's with us from Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah, hi, Neil. It's nice to be on the show.
Thanks for calling.
I wanted to say that I'm a registered Democrat. However, I did have a great, I do have a great admiration for Ronald Reagan now, probably more so than when Jimmy Carter lost the election in 1979, because I do think that he was an eloquent speaker, and I think that he really carried himself like I think presidents should. You know, he just was able to communicate a lot of optimism, and I think that that's really a great quality in a president. However, I think that on the flip side of that, I think that he fell short of greatness in the fact that he did not continue America's introspection. You know, during the 60s and the 70s, there was a lot of turmoil because of, you know, the civil rights movement and, you know, some other things that were going on.
Sure.
And I think that he did not continue, he did not prod prod America to continue that introspection. And so I think while it's good that people became optimistic, I think that it wasn't so great that people just completely forgot about some of the things that were left undone, some of the unfinished business from that era. And I think that that has sort of left some of the wounds open, you know, like as far as, you know, blacks and stuff in this country. And I think that's one thing that I think he probably would have been able to do if he had really put that on, you know, his list of priorities, because he had a way of talking to people that would really make them listen.
Janice, a fair point. Thanks very much for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Joining us now here in Studio 3A is Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author Haynes Johnson. His books include the bestseller Sleepwalking Through History, America in the Reagan Years, and good to have you on the program.
Thanks, Neil. I love listening to these people who call in. They're wonderful.
In the last few days that have passed in our discussion so far today, what do you think has gone missing about the impact of Ronald Reagan and on the 1980s and the many changes that he helped inspire throughout?
Actually, I think what Janice just said is what has been missing from the dialogue. That is to say, yes, he conducted himself like a president should. He had grace. He was eloquent. But he fell short of greatness because, as she said, he left so many things undone. And he had a chance to do more. I think the social compact was broken. I think people at the bottom hurt more. And it wasn't just black Americans, it was minorities across the board. Homelessness increased. And I think looking realistically, calmly, thoughtfully at the real legacy of what happened, what worked and what didn't work is what needs to be undone. And it won't be done now for a long time. We're in a period of mourning and remembrance, and all that's natural and understandable. But this was a consequential president, but he left behind many, many problems.
He was an empathetic man in person, one-on-one.
That's right.
There was no question about that. Yet he was somehow able to not see some of these problems.
Well, he was a great fabulist, and I don't mean the word fabulous. He was a great teller of fables and myths. And I think before David Gergen was talking about this, telling larger truths, but he was also a great spinner of tales that were not true, but he actually believed them. So when you talk to Reagan, he had this ability to this always avuncular, great stories and so forth, and he literally believed them. I was one of many, many journalists who spent time traveling with Reagan when he first ran for president, on his first trip, as a matter of fact. And I was on the plane, and I saw him 5 days in a row get off the plane and tell the same story and cry. Tears would come out of his eyes every time. And this is the way he'd end. This was his vision of the real America. It was the B-17 bomber coming down from Germany, all shot up, smoking, and about to crash. And the pilot, they're over the English Channel. The pilot says, bail out, bail out. Every everybody bails out, and he's about to bail out, and he hears a voice coming in over his earphones. It's the ball gunner. Yeah, and he says, I can't get out, sir. I'm stuck back here. So the pilot says, don't worry, son. We'll ride this one down alone. And so they crash, and then Reagan would stop every time, five times a day. He would pause, and he would look husky, and he'd say, Medal of Honor, awarded posthumously, and tears would come out of his eyes every time.
Haynes Johnson, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Mary, who's with us from Beverly, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hi.
Neil, hi, Haynes. It's great to be on the show. I want to add a piece that I haven't heard. I haven't listened to 100% of the coverage since Reagan's death, but one thing I haven't heard anybody talk about is the fact that Ronald Reagan didn't say the word AIDS until he was practically out of the presidency. I was living in the San Francisco area in the 80s, and I can tell you it was devastating to pick up the community newspaper and see 40 obituaries for gay men every week in, you know, week in and week out and week in and week out. And, you know, a president who was not talking about AIDS, was not talking about what should be done, and basically saying, in essence, you know, these gay men are getting what they deserve. And when people talk about Reagan's great compassion, I think about the fact that it's a very selective compassion, because he was very selective about who he was willing to care about, to put resources behind. And, you know, it's kind of like the Anita Bryant thing, you know, that whole business about he was very clear about good and evil. Well, the problem was, you know, if he decided that you were an evil person, then that personal moral decision had huge policy impacts for people that are, you know, are still reverberating. And when people talk about the comparison between Bush and Reagan, you know, Bush administration has taken the word condom off the CDC and NIH website.
Mm-hmm. Haynes Johnson, Mary's making a fair point about Ronald Reagan and AIDS.
Oh, yes, it's a very important point, and it's even more complicated than Mary suggested, if I may offer, because Reagan didn't even know about AIDS. He was inattentive. This is the shocking thing. He learned about it from his doctor in the White House talking about when Rock Hudson died, his friend, the Hollywood actor. He died of AIDS, and so Reagan, the doctor, briefed him on what AIDS was. This is long into the epidemic, and of course the idea that the president wasn't aware of this epidemic is a shocker, but it's part of the laxness and inattentiveness of a lot of things that were true of the Reagan presidency, not of the things he cared most about: fighting communism, cutting taxes, reducing size of the government. Well or not that he did those things, but the AIDS was a classic example, and he could have made a difference. That's the sad part. I'd like to say one more thing, though, about the one thing I think in the AIDS conversation, that Reagan was not a homophobe. That's one thing. He was actually a tolerant guy, but he was actually inattentive, and he was surprised, but then he also didn't call for any movement on AIDS.
Well, that's the point. I mean, I think you can kill people by neglect as much as you can kill them by direct
Mary,
thanks. Absolutely.
Thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more after a short break. We're going to continue talking about the 1980s as the era of Ronald Reagan. Does rereading Bonfire of the Vanities or watching Dynasty reruns remind you of the booming 80s? I mentioned there of Anita Bryant, who I had not thought of in quite some time. Give us a phone call, 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're talking about the largest figure from the 1980s, our 40th president, Ronald Reagan. He, of course, died on Saturday. He will have a state funeral here in Washington this Friday. Join the conversation. How does his presence shape your memory of the 1980s? Was it Rich Little's Reagan impersonations? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. Some of Ronald Reagan's memorable speeches from the 1980s, as well as photos and timeline, you can see those at NPR.org. And joining us now is Richard Viguerie. He has a book coming out in a few weeks about the impact of the Reagan presidency, America's Right Turn. He's also one of the early pioneers of direct mail fundraising, and he joins us from his office in Manassas, Virginia. Good of you to join us today.
My pleasure, Neil.
Take us back to election night 1980. What did that mean to you?
It meant everything for us. I had operated, quite frankly, under the radar for 15 years, and to the extent that the liberals, the establishment press, noticed what I was doing, which was not very often, they were very critical of it. But election night, within a few hours, the establishment media, the political establishment in Washington, all became aware of what we were doing, and it was kind of like an aha moment where, aha, that's what Viguerie and friends have been up to by mailing hundreds of millions of letters every year. And it just it put conservatives on the map. We had been really relegated to almost like being a country cousin in American politics. And it just we kind of came up and stood up tall and walked in the sunshine and became, you know, part of the political process here in a way that we had never been previously. It just changed everything for conservatives.
Vindication.
Vindication, but it also energized us. When you know, when Reagan was elected in 1980, he was not elected with a quote-unquote Reaganite Congress. That didn't come until 1994 election. So we had a lot of work to do. We had just nominated and elected our first conservative, but we had a lot of work to do, not only in Washington, but across the country. And it's still developing, but Reagan broke everything loose for us.
Where do you place Ronald Reagan in the spectrum of conservative politicians?
Well, you know, all conservatives today stand on the shoulders of two people primarily, Barry Goldwater politically and Bill Buckley intellectually. And from Goldwater and Buckley came Ronald Reagan and all other conservatives. But he is the one that really broke everything loose for us. And without Ronald Reagan, I guess maybe the conservative movement would have developed down the road, but it would have taken maybe another 20 years. And it's been a big disappointment, quite frankly, to conservatives that over these 40 or 50 years we've been building the movement, the only really major national figure that the conservative movement has thrown up, so to speak, is Ronald Reagan. The left is blessed with many, many national leaders, but the conservatives haven't been. And Ronald Reagan is the only one that walked with us, came out of our ranks, and was a product of the conservative movement. When he ran in 1976, no matter where he went, at what time of the morning or the evening, there could be hundreds of people there because they were part of Phyllis Schlafly's group or this conservative organization, the Moral Majority, whatever. It was a movement that came together to support his candidacy, but we haven't seen that before or since.
Richard Viguerie, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Richard Viguerie is the author most recently of America's Right Turn. He's currently chairman of American Target Advertising. He joined us on the phone from his office in Manassas, Virginia. Still with us here in Studio 3A is author Haynes Johnson and historian. Richard Viguerie mentioned that Ronald Reagan invigorated the conservative movement. What effect did he have on liberals?
He also changed the way liberals thought about not only Reagan, but the country. And ever since Reagan arrived, and liberals have been in retreat. They were shocked. I mean, they never thought they would lose the Congress, for one thing. They could lose the White House. But Reagan set in motion the forces that led to the conservative movement we're seeing now. There's no question about that. And what Viguerie said was absolutely correct. He did more than raise them and make them feel good and walk tall and sunshine and the rest. He created the underpinning for the conservative movement we're seeing today. It changed the country and the way people thought about politics. The question is whether it's permanent or not. That's a whole other question. I would argue that proposition, but there is no doubt that from Reagan coming forward, standing on the shoulders of Barry Goldwater, as he said, and intellectually of Buckley, but Reagan was the sun king, the one who gave the glow that created what has been and is still the conservative movement, even if it's fraying a bit.
Let's go back to the phones. Chris is with us from Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, hi, Neil. I just wanted to point out that I thought that the most significant contribution of the Reagan years was really the advent of the Reagan Democrat and the way that sowed the seeds of the current blue-red state rift that is talked about, where, as I perceive that, there is the interest of working-class people. Reagan did a great job of positioning that as being a problem with the poor or social problems being the problem of the working class and where all their money was going, where the money at this, in actuality was going to big defense interests and other programs that created giant deficits.
Mm-hmm. Some of that defense buildup started actually in the Carter administration, which he gets neither the credit for, nor the blame for, depending on how you look at it. But Haynes Johnson, Chris is right. Of course, demographic shifts, people moving to the West and South changed things too. But Ronald Reagan had a big part.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our politics is different because of that. And Reagan was able to capitalize upon the Reagan Democrats, the Blue Dogs, union members, working class people, whatever you want, however you want to define it. And for those people to have come in after the New Deal, where Reagan started as a New Dealer, don't forget, and to move to the right as they have, it's changed our politics. We're now debating, and the election is going to be won or lost, this one, the 2004, over whether Mr. Kerry can reach and recapture some of that old base of the Democratic Party.
Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Here's an email. This from Susan in Lawrenceburg, Indiana. I was 19 when President Reagan was first elected. I felt he gave me pride to be an American. I felt he tried always to do the right thing. I feel great sorrow at his loss.
Actually, that's what will be remembered most about Reagan. We can argue about the legacy on policies, foreign, domestic, and so forth, but there will be no question whatever that Reagan made Americans feel good and feel pride. He didn't make all feel good, but there was a glow from that presidency, and that was his singular personality. That's why he was successful and able to change the chemistry of American politics.
We mentioned Barry Goldwater before. Ronald Reagan carried a few more states than Barry Goldwater did. One of the big differences was just what you were talking about, that optimism, that sunny personality, that feeling of goodwill, which really mourning in America, I guess.
It was mourning in America, and he personified that feeling better than any politician since Franklin Roosevelt.
How do you see his impact on culture today?
I think it's very large because I think, that's a huge question. we could talk for hours on that. For one thing, he's changed the way we think about politics. He's changed the ideology of the country, number two. And I think he also created, at least in the 80s and well into the 90s, a sense of privatization of public services. You can say greed. You can say out for yourself. You don't need the services of government. Laissez-faire. I think the balance was shifted and altered, but there are consequences in all of those things.
Haynes Johnson, thanks very much for joining us today.
Delight.
Haynes Johnson, a social historian. His books include the bestseller Sleepwalking Through History, America in the Reagan Years. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Here are some of the stories that we're working on today here at NPR News. U.S. Special Operations troops in Iraq freed 4 Western hostages from their kidnappers. 3 Italians and 1 Pole are said all to be in good health. And in Europe, police have arrested at least 17 people in connection with the March 11 terror bombings in Spain, those attributed to associates of Al-Qaeda. You can hear details on those stories coming up later today on All Things Considered. Right now, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.